Welcome. This is Ananda Vrindavan Devi, president of the Hare Krishna community near Washington, D.C. What follows is a Sunday lecture recorded at our temple. Every Sunday, we invite the public for meditation, singing, a lecture, and a vegetarian lunch. We'd love for you to join us. More information is available at isconofdc.org. That's ISKCONofDC.org. Thanks, and I do hope you enjoy the talk.
So these last few days have been very, very powerful days due to the appearance and disappearance, which Prabhupada, by the way, said was the same thing, of very great saintly persons. And we could spend many, many hours talking about each one of them, and we have less than an hour to speak about. I'm going to speak about three of them, by the way. She said two, but there's three. There's Jiva Goswami, and Haridas Thakur, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And these three personalities are very significant contributors to our Gaudiya Vaishnava history. They all played significant roles in formulating and propagating the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All three of them come from very different backgrounds, and all of three of them use different talents and taught us different lessons about the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All three of them were exceptional in some ways, and yet spoke to a certain commonality amongst all of us, which can inspire and enliven us in our service to Krishna. So I thought, rather than try to give you the history of all three of them, because that would be very long and perhaps impossible in the time that we have, I would try to develop some understanding of the unique contribution that each one of them made, and how by looking at their lives and by respecting them, understanding them, learning from them, we can improve the quality of our own devotional service. Well, to begin, we'll start with Srila Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur was very unique because he was born in what is sometimes considered a Mlecha family. It's interesting, and in the last few days I've been speaking in different places by the mercy of many of the devotees here. And the question has come up, because I mentioned that when I was in, recently I was in Chennai, and some woman came to see me, and she wanted some scriptural reference as to how Krishna more appreciates our devotion than our caste, and he's willing to overlook our caste, our birth, because of our devotion. And she asked me for scriptural references, and we talked a little about Duryodhana and Arjuna and other things. But here, Haridas Thakur is a perfect example, and actually, I found out that in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, we have a clear explanation that Haridas Thakur appeared specifically in the family that he appeared in, a Muslim family, because Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach this particular lesson. And I just want to quote the Chaitanya Bhagavat here. It says, Haridas Thakur was born in a low caste family on the Lord's order, in order to show that caste and class have no importance at all. All the scriptures say that a devotee of Vishnu, though born in a lowly family, is still worshipable by all. What will one's caste do for one is born in a high caste but does not worship Krishna? He will go to hell in spite of his high birth. Haridas Thakur took a low birth just to bear witness to these scriptural statements. He is comparable to Prahlad, who was born in the family of demons or Hanuman, who was born in a monkey family. They both belong superficially to low castes. But because of their devotion, Hanuman is famous as a great devotee of Lord Ram, who would do anything for Lord Ram, so much glorified by his pure devotion to Lord Ram. And Prahlad Maharaj, this was one of the favorite stories of Srila Prabhupada in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how he was so pure in his devotion to Krishna that Krishna appeared in the half-man, half-lion incarnation to protect him from the abuse of his father, Hiranyakashipu. And Haridas Thakur also taught us other lessons, besides the fact, the main fact here given, that no matter where we come from, no matter what our history, no matter what our background, no matter what we've done in the past, even in this lifetime, what to speak of in previous lifetimes, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada's gift of Krishna consciousness to the West, we can take up the process of spiritual life and we can perfect our lives in Krishna's service by just engaging in this very simple process of chanting Hare Krishna and reading Prabhupada's books and associating with each other and loving Vaishnava relationships. So Haridas Thakur also showed a great determination to overcome all obstacles. In his Krishna consciousness, he found that there were many bars, many people accused him of things. He was kind of rejected by both his own people, the Muslims. They looked at him negatively because he had given up his faith and he was taking up a Krishna consciousness. And even amongst the Hindus, he was considered by some to be a fanatic, a sentimentalist, and he was challenged in a public assembly. And the results of those challenges only led to the glories of Haridas Thakur becoming even more well-known. He was whipped in 21 marketplaces because the Muslim magistrate was afraid that here is this person, he's converted to Krishna consciousness, so to speak. And he's so powerful, so charismatic. We have to show our people that this is not a good idea. We shouldn't do this. We don't want an massive leaving of the Muslim faith and becoming Vaishnavas. So we better chastise him severely. First, he offered him the opportunity. Just give up this chanting of Hare Krishna. Take up your own spiritual path. Why do you want to take up another's spiritual path? But Haridas Thakur refused, and he said, you'll never get me to stop chanting the holy name of Krishna. That holy name of Krishna will always come from my mouth. And no matter what, you can do something to my body, but you can't do anything to me. I will keep chanting Hare Krishna no matter what. So the Qazi ordered him to be whipped in 22 marketplaces. And ultimately, we understand that he was receiving these blows in each marketplace that would kill any ordinary human being. And still marketplace after marketplace after marketplace after marketplace, he was just chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he was also doing another thing while he was chanting Hare Krishna. He was praying that the persons who were beating him would attain salvation, that they would be forgiven for their offense, that they would ultimately make spiritual advancement. And later we find that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expressed that he would have come and killed them. He was thinking, I want to kill these guys. Look what they're doing. Nityananda Prabhu got just one small mark on his head bleeding. And Lord Chaitanya appeared with the Sudarshan Chakra to cut his head off. What to speak of Haridas Thakur in 22 marketplaces being whipped? Can you imagine Lord Chaitanya's anger? But because of Haridas Thakur's prayer, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could not punish them. He couldn't. So he did another thing. He took the whips that were being given to Haridas Thakur superficially, and he received them on his back. And later in the Mahaprakash, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed Haridas Thakur how he had had these scars from that whipping on his back. He had protected Haridas Thakur. And then after 22 marketplaces, Haridas Thakur could perceive that these two whippers, they were nervous. They were scared, frightened. And he said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Well, you know, what's going to happen is we're going to go back to the Qazi. You're going to still be going to be alive. And he's going to think that we were easy on you, that we didn't really beat you. And then he's going to kill us." So Haridas Thakur said, "Oh, well, I didn't really know I was causing inconvenience to you. That's okay. I'll die." And so he went into a trance, and he appeared to everybody to be dead. And actually, there was some question, what should we do with his body? Qazi said, "Well, we should burn it." And then the other person, the Nawab, said, "No, don't burn it. Don't even give him the benefit of being buried or burned. Throw him in the Ganges." So they threw him in the Ganges, and he floated downriver, and he got out of the water, and he walked away. And they saw him walking away, and then they realized, this is a sadhu. This is a saintly person, and we've committed a very great offense. And so they offered respects to Haridas Thakur. And there are other incidences also where Haridas Thakur defended the holy name, the power of the holy name. He glorified the holy name as the most easy and sublime facility to attain love of God. We may get other things, we may get liberation, we may get knowledge from so many other sources, but by purely and devotedly chanting the holy name, we get love of Krishna. And love of Krishna is more important, is better than any other byproduct of chanting or doing anything in spiritual life. And when he was accused of being sentimental in that statement, that the holy name could surpass liberation, by just the shadow of the holy name one gets liberation, but the holy name has so much more to offer than liberation, then he said, someone accused him and said, "May your nose fall off." And Haridas Thakur said, "Let it be. If I'm wrong, then let my nose fall off." But instead, the other person, the accuser's nose fell off because he got some leprosy. And so on and on again, Haridas Thakur showed us by his wonderful example and by his wonderful relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the humility that he had. Because even though he was such a great devotee and he was recognized by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the point where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went and visited him every day, brought him prasadam from Jagannath Temple every day, Haridas Thakur was so humble that he wouldn't even go near the temple. What to speak of try to get in. Sometimes we're not allowed in the temple, and some devotees devise different ways of getting in the temple. You know, they get a good tan, or they put on some little outfit, and they get into the temple. But Haridas Thakur, he didn't have any interest in going through those things. He actually felt in the core of his being that he was too fallen, that all he could do was take shelter of the holy name, that he had such a humble attitude, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reciprocated with that humility and honored him for that humility and set him up in a place where he could come and be visited every day by the Vaishnavas and by Mahaprabhu himself. And Mahaprabhu would give him Mahaprasadam. And ultimately, Mahaprabhu was there at his passing away. And his passing away was so glorious that he passed away with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet on his chest, looking at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's face. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his body and danced with it in ecstasy and got all the devotees involved in wonderful kirtan. I'm sure Gauravani in a different incarnation was there chanting. And they had a wonderful kirtan. And all the devotees were overwhelmed by the glorious life and passing of Haridas Thakur. So from Haridas Thakur, we could understand the power of the holy name, the power of humility, the overwhelming power of Vaishnava devotion to Krishna, that it can surpass any material qualification or disqualification. We saw that with Srila Prabhupada had faith in that. And that's why he was able to come to the West and give us Krishna consciousness, even though we had no qualification. We had no qualification. And many devotees criticized Srila Prabhupada even for doing that, for giving us Brahman initiation and the Gayatri mantra, the holy name. They criticized him. How are you giving it to these mulechas? They don't know anything about anything. You know, they're not even clean. What they don't know, no. But Prabhupada had so much faith in the holy name of the Lord, so much faith in the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he knew that we would take Krishna consciousness seriously if we just took up the process. And many devotees did take up that process, and now we have ISKCON Potomac and so many other temples all around the world by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and by Prabhupada's preaching and by the example of Haridas Thakur. And then we can look at Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was from a different situation. He was from a wealthy, high-class Brahmin family. He was a Sanskrit scholar. Matter of fact, from his birth, he was so attracted to Krishna consciousness or to Krishna that in his very young age, he crafted some deities of Krishna and Balaram. And he used to worship those deities of Krishna Balaram very, very elaborately. And he would sleep with those deities of Krishna and Balaram. And his parents thought it was just like a child thing. They didn't realize how the depth of his devotion. And he became a great Sanskrit scholar. He was the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan, so he was had good family members. And he was very, very devoted to Krishna from the very, very beginning. And he made his life's work in scholarly pursuits because he was gifted with brilliance in philosophy, in poetry, in linguistics, in Sanskrit. And he wrote over 500,000 Sanskrit verses, 25 books, amazing books, glorifying and proving the glories of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the power of the Srimad Bhagavatam to reveal Krishna in his glories in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami also taught us a little bit about humility, and because he was such a scholar, and sometimes we see, sometimes in Alachua there are a few devotees who are very scholarly, and we find sometimes that after the Bhagavatam's class is over, they give another Bhagavatam class, and they kind of show off their erudition, you know, chant many shlokas and so many things, and we have sometimes seen that this tendency to become proud of scholarly pursuits is dangerous. We saw even in our movement that some of our greatest scholars went by the wayside sometimes because they became too absorbed in scholarliness and not enough humble and submissive to the order of the spiritual master, to the power of the spiritual master's devotion to Krishna and his ability to understand how to apply the philosophy of Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. And so they went by the wayside. So Jiva Goswami once what happened was Balabhacharya came in and he challenged Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was Jiva Goswami's spiritual master and his uncle. And he was also a brilliant devotee, wonderful, amazing preacher. And Jiva Goswami was young. He was the youngest of the six Goswamis, actually. And so this person came and he criticized some of Rupa Goswami's writings and suggested some changes that could be made that would make it better. And so Rupa Goswami just heard him and accepted that. But Jiva Goswami became very angry. And later he challenged that person and he defeated him in an argument. And when Rupa Goswami heard, he became very angry at Jiva. He said, "You have some desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. You want to show off your scholarliness, therefore you don't belong in Vrindavan." And he sent him out of Vrindavan. And Jiva Goswami took this very, very much to heart. And he went and he lived in the hole made by a crocodile just outside of Vrindavan, and he was living on just a little bit of wheat flour mixed with Jamuna water. And so basically he was fasting, and he was staying out there. And then Sanatan Goswami went to Rupa Goswami. He said, "You know, you're neglecting one of the principles of Krishna consciousness, of spiritual life." He said, "Really? What is that?" He said, "Jivadoya." "You are not being merciful to the jivas." "How is that?" "Well, think about it." And then he realized, Jiva Goswami, you're talking about Jiva. I'm not being... So he called him back. And Jiva learned from that. And when Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had left the planet, Jiva Goswami became the leader of the Vaishnavas. And he was always very, very humble to all the devotees, always arranging for their care, always making sure that they were very well served and taken care of nicely. So Jiva Goswami is also a very, very wonderful leader by example for us, that we can understand that. And these two men, they had different offerings to make to Krishna. Of course, they both chanted and they both shared knowledge. But at the same time, they were very different personalities. And yet they were both great personalities, worshipped by the Vaishnavas until today still, and recognized amongst each other as being great contributors to the preaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, the last great soul is Bhaktivinod Thakur. The last one we'll speak about, far from the last one. Bhaktivinod Thakur was also an amazing person. He wasn't a contemporary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like the other two. He came much later. And he amongst all of them, for me at least, is a very amazing devotee because, first of all, of his background, and second of all, of his application in Krishna consciousness. He managed, one of the main questions I get as I travel and I speak to people is how to balance the material, how do I balance my material life and my spiritual life? It's so hard for me to get my rounds chanted and I have to go to work every day and, you know, I have to support my family and all these things. How do you do it? I hear that question so many times. Bhaktivinod Thakur was the emblem of finding that balance. Now, his ability to find that balance may be exceptional in many ways, but nevertheless, he did find that balance, and he maintained a very important, very high-profile job. I think you heard a class from Shanaka Rishi Prabhu from Ireland not too long ago, and he talked about the Bhakta Lok, the people from that were under British Raj in India, and they were well-to-do or at least well-educated Vaishnavas or Hindus. And as the British Raj became stronger and stronger, they started to kind of their faith in their traditions became a little weakened, and they started to compromise their traditions, mix them together, and try to make them look good in terms of material thought in that day. That they wanted them to be accepted by everybody, so they started to water them down and started to make them kind of compromise them with the British thought pattern and the religious thought patterns of other traditions, so that they would be accepted. And Bhaktivinod Thakur walked into that situation and became a devout follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. He also studied Christianity deeply. But when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he searched for that book. He heard about that book, and he searched for that book. It was actually very hard for him to find it. And finally, he found a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and when he read that book and came in contact with the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became a devout follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at the same time as he did that, as he stood up for the traditional Vaishnav way of worship and the a following of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at the same time, he also impressed the British government with his expertise in doing his service and his brilliance in dealing with the indigenous people and his brilliance in dealing with the British. And so he achieved, ultimately, a very high position as a high court judge. And actually, he was so coveted by the British government that he could ask to be placed wherever he wanted to be placed, and ultimately he asked to be placed in Sarabi Kunj, which is right near the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which Bhaktivinod Thakur is responsible for excavating and re-establishing. So Bhaktivinod Thakur was a visionary. He made several prophecies which or he had several visions, and several prophecies came from those visions, which the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and Prabhupada are informed by. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his teachings were completely unheard of in the West, and even in much of India. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was determined that those teachings would be spread all over the world, and he wanted to assist in that mission, but he had a vision that eventually someone would come, and someone would take the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. So he wrote a little book, and he sent that book. It was a book that was written, it had an English part of it, and the life and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he took that book and he sent it all over. And one copy of that book was in McGill University in Montreal. And he sent that book in the year that Srila Prabhupada was born, 1896, which was the year that Srila Prabhupada was born, was the same year that that book went out and Prabhupada appeared. And Prabhupada made a comment that it was prophetic, that he was actually born in that same year that Lord Chaitanya crossed the ocean and went to Canada or the West. And of course, he also made a prediction that eventually people from all over the world, he mentioned countries, Germany, Russia, all these people would come together in Sridhar Mayapur, and together they would chant Jai Sachinandana. And so we see 100 years later, after Bhaktivinoda Thakur's departure, or after Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prophecy, all the devotees from ISKCON came. And actually, I've had this experience. It's an amazing experience. You really feel like you're in the spiritual world. But we have Nabadweep Parikrama, and it grows each year. But the first year, there were only 3,000 people on it. And these people, there are three parties. There's one party of Bengalis. There's one party now, there's one party of Russians. And there's another party of everybody else, all the other countries. And now there's even more than that. But then there was three. And they have these series of tents. They set up like a tent city. And it moves ahead of the devotees. And the three parties go to different places in different orders. So they kind of follow each other in different ways. And they all go to seven or eight different places. And at the end, they come back to the Yogapith. And they come from three different directions. And as far as you can see the Harinam party with 1,000 devotees carrying flags and garnishing flags that have tilak on them and the Hare Krishna mantra on them, and the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra is tumultuous, and these three parties come together in this one little corner in front of the Yogapith, which is a temple, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in that place, they start to embrace each other, and they start to sing Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana, and they hug each other, and everyone's crying. And everybody is hugging each other, and they all go together, hugging each other into the kirtan mandap of the Yogapith temple, which is quite large. And they chant and chant and chant for hours. And when you're in that kirtan, you feel like you're in the spiritual world. There's nothing like it. When all these people come together with the power of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the prophecy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had the vision to see that soon all the world would come together under the banner of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and chant his holy name together. Together in a loving embrace, literally a loving embrace. And you see these old people, they don't speak any English. And these other people that are young and they don't speak any Bengali or any one of many of the languages translated into so many languages, but they all speak the language of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and they all speak the language of the glories of of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jai Sachinandana. And when they come together, it's totally electric. So Lord Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the vision to see that. He also had the vision before that. He had the vision to see the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He did great research. He originally... People were saying that the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Nabadweep, which is on the other side of the Ganga. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he knew in his heart of hearts it wasn't right. And he did so much research, and by looking at the shifting of the Ganga and the maps of the various years and the different histories that were available, he pinpointed one place where there were tulsi profusely growing. And he took Gorkishore Das Babaji, who was just a very old person and in a basket, and he brought him to that site. And when he got to that site, he jumped out of the basket. And he said, this is the place. This is the place. This is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur went around with his cloth. And he begged from everybody, just you give 1 rupee. Just you give 1 rupee and we'll construct a temple for the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even though he was a high court judge, a magistrate, he still took this very humble position and went around and raised the funds to construct the birthplace of, excavate the place of birth of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he also saw from his place, he saw this Adbhuta Mandir, that someday there would be a great temple where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be worshipped by people from all over the world. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had an amazing schedule. I thought I'd share it with you. Since all of you want to know how to balance your material and spiritual life, I'd like to give you a template so that when you feel the need to adjust your schedule a little bit in order to fit everything in, you can look at this template and get some inspiration. So he went to bed. It starts with him going to sleep. So he would go to bed at 8 o'clock in the evening, and then he would wake up at 10 o'clock in the evening. And then from 10 o'clock in the evening until 4 o'clock in the morning, he would write. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as you probably know, he wrote many, many wonderful, wonderful poems and wonderful songs and wonderful books. And so he would write from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. And then at 4 in the morning, he would go to sleep. But he would wake up at 4:30 in the morning. And then from 4:30 in the morning to 7 in the morning, he would chant his japa. You know, just like Ananda Vrindavan Mataji said, that the morning is the best time for chanting. So he would chant in the morning. And then from 7 to 7:30 in the morning, he would do his correspondence. Fortunately for him, there was no email. So he could just write a few letters. Then from 7:30 in the morning to 9:30 in the morning, he would study. And from 9:30 to 10, he would bathe, take prasadam, and his prasadam would consist of a half a liter of milk, some fruit, and 2 chapatis. If you're eating more than that, you might consider cutting down. So then from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., he did his duty in the court. And it's said that when he was in the court, because he had such clarity of thought, because his mind was so clear from chanting and writing and worshiping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he could see who was right and who was wrong just by listening for a few minutes. So he would process 3, 4, 5 times as many cases in an hour as all the other court judges put together. So he would get through with his work really quick. At 1 o'clock, he would go home. Fortunately, there was no traffic on the beltway. And then from 1 to 2 p.m., he would go home and he would refresh himself a little bit. And then from 2 to 5 p.m., he would do his court duties again. From 5 to 7, he would translate Sanskrit into Bengali and English. And then from 7 to 8, he would bathe, take prasadam, again, a half a liter of milk, rice, and 2 chapatis, and then he would go to sleep. So that was his schedule. The total would be sleep 3 hours, write 8.5 hours, japa and study 4.5 hours, and work 6 hours. So you might have to adjust it a little bit for your individual needs. Tweak it. But somehow we can see the priorities. At least we can see the priorities, that where there's a will, there's a way. And with him, there was a very strong will and there was a way. So he managed to do everything. And he did everything perfectly. He wrote 100 books. 100 books. And they're amazing books, too. They're not, you know, little Harry Potter books. They're amazing books. And we get so much solace from them now by studying those books and chanting those songs and getting strength just from the bhajan of the import of those wonderful books. He discovered the appearance place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was very innovative in his preaching, which is something that we're grappling with in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, finding the balance between innovative preaching and tradition. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was brilliant, and Prabhupada also was brilliant, in that he was able to balance the need of the time and package Krishna consciousness in a way that he could give it to people without at all compromising the essence, the principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very, very expert at that. And he was able to revive the preaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout Bengal and ultimately begin the preaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message in the West. Prabhupada actually said that we in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness should give credit to the establishment of ISKCON to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually the person who brought Krishna consciousness to the West. Prabhupada was just following in his footsteps. This is what Prabhupada said. So actually the person who we owe homage to for establishing our wonderful preaching mission is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So these three devotees, these three saints, they are wonderful people, and we should be very careful not to look at their life and think that that's them and this is me, and there's no way I could do that. They're unique, and what does it have to? They're just nice stories. We can hear about them. They were far out. But actually, they were very much teaching, by their example, lessons which we need to learn. Lessons to learn about humility, lessons to learn about the unity of everybody as a jiva soul, as a servant of Krishna, and the importance of giving the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. And each one of these devotees did it in a different way, a unique way, but each one of these devotees was 100% successful in their life's mission. And each one of them left the boat for us so that we could also cross over the ocean of birth and death. And if we take their example, something from all of them, we can find strength and conviction to go forward in our Krishna consciousness. So I thank you very much. And if there's any questions, I can try to answer. Hare Krishna.
This lecture was brought to you by the Hare Krishna Temple near Washington, D.C. For more information, please visit iskonofdc.org. That's iskcon of dc.org.